did.
We're here.
We made it.
Unlike others in this episode, we made it.
Everyone else. Man.
Season 6. In the bag.
I know we always say we don't know how to talk about this, but I feel like more so than normal, I literally don't know how to talk about this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the exact opposite. When it was over, I didn't speak to anyone in the room. And I was thinking to myself, this
you
is
just
gonna...
texted us. This and you said, we need to record right now.
Okay.
This is going to be the easiest episode of the podcast to record because that was the greatest episode of television. Might have been the greatest thing.
I think the harder thing is where do we start?
Mm-hmm.
Not trying to formulate words around what we actually saw, but I'm a little bit disappointed, Hannah. I can't tease you anymore and say, hey, we're halfway through the season.
I know.
Three episodes to go. One episode to go.
It's actually over.
It's over. You've made it through. You survived a full Game of Thrones season.
Where's the t-shirt? I need the t-shirt.
And to everybody tweeting, lighting up the internet tonight, you survived season 6 and following along with us. Thank you. Thank you for sticking around this long.
Catching that episode in real time as it aired, as it surpassed the what was then the 9 o'clock hour as well, and just kept going with many scenes and many endings to come past the hour mark. I was just even more enamored and in awe of what these showrunners and creators and producers have been able to accomplish, not only with this finale, but with this season. It's a masterwork. It's very well conceived.
I have to say on the part of Ramin Djawadi, an amazing job throughout.
Oh,
incredible.
Yes.
This entire
Unreal.
Episode from really the first moment all the way through the end, but just the whole sequence in King's Landing in the Sept of Baelor.
Incredible.
Was just unbelievable. And then at the end, the music coming back, the Reigns of Castamere subtly playing underneath, Cersei taking the throne. I just thought it was really, really well done.
Powerful. And please fucking clap for Miguel Sapochnik again for destroying.
Seriously.
I mean.
incredible.
Certain shots this episode will haunt me. Will stay with me forever. The window.
Tommen.
That Tommen is looking out. Yeah.
That was incredible.
That was so good.
That was incredible. I thought we were getting an extended look for the emotion of what devastation has just struck the capital.
Billowing out of Baelor.
And then
he just stands up and jumps out.
Unbelievable.
Somewhat ironic that going back to episode 1 of season 1, Bran gets pushed out of a window. Tommen jumps out of a window.
Just falls. Tips.
Doesn't even
Both
miss a
Cersei's
beat.
Both are Cersei's fault. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I call her Cersei? I meant, Queen of the Andals and first of her name. And
Qyburn cut protector. The title short a little bit.
Timing. They were at that point at like 67 minutes.
Right. He has his business to worry about. He doesn't have time to memorize titles.
I don't think Jaime keeping on that.
Jaime
that
survived.
Thread, he survived. Okay.
What a relief, right?
Yes.
That's an own. That's so scared. Yes. Yes.
Bronn survived. Yes.
Well, it's just so nice that Arya let everyone leave the castle first before turning into Mrs. Lovett. And, she did not include Jaime Lannister in the feast. So that's great.
Fantastic.
But that look he was giving Cersei, what do you think it meant? He's clearly a little concerned. I'd say more than a little concerned that she is still on her power trip.
Well, he returned home and she was being sworn in.
I think he's a little concerned, yeah. If not the look he gave when they first arrived overlooking the city, then certainly when he arrived in the throne room and saw her being sworn in, as Zach said, during the episode we tweeted out that on a scale of 1 to King Aerys, she is pretty damn batshit crazy.
I saw that, yeah. You love that phrase. You love that and the
crazier than a shithouse rat, yeah.
Both would apply. I think Cersei has effectively, we kind of guessed at this, but I think none of us could have seen exactly how straightforward the path ahead was for Cersei. Like, she basically assumes the throne now, and that is, nobody questions that or is at the moment. It's just, there's something funny to me about sitting in an audience of your peers who you actually just like basically killed or tried to kill by blowing up the city with wildfire. It was somehow limited to the Sept, right? Granted, maybe the next corner office blocks or so, but still, like, the realm should hate her, and more people, I don't know, I just see that as being more of a, more safely a closed ceremony sort of thing.
They should fear her.
That's, yeah.
I mean, they gotta fall in line. They have no choice.
Yep.
I mean, if looking, you see the look on her face. You see the outfit that she's wearing, which I was very into. And what she just did with the wildfire, I mean, who can go up against Cersei if half of King's Landing couldn't defeat her? If the gods couldn't defeat her?
Well, from the south, we have the Dornish, the Tyrells, Targaryens, and the Greyjoys. And from the north, we have the White Walkers, and we have the North united under the Wolf of Stark again. So,
The White Wolf.
The White Wolf. Did anyone else have tears in their eyes while everyone was chanting King in the North? What a moment.
It was. It was a very proud moment. And I think it was very well orchestrated by Peter Baelish.
Well, orchestrated to a point, right? He kind of, that look that he shared with Sansa is not a happy.
It was kind of
look.
Like, I told you so. I told you, right? This was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. He,
you don't think
is
he had
pitting
a hand in it, though?
It's possible.
I think he wanted Sansa to be the Queen of the North, or he wanted Sansa to marry him so that they could have the North. I don't think he wanted Jon to have the North.
No, but he wants to prove, I think, that it's a boys' club. And I think Sansa, the message was clearly received. And I think she's going to continue to be at odds with Jon. Unfortunately, my least favorite subplot of this season, you know, it looks like it will carry over, and I can see the importance for it. Sansa is a ruler in her own right. She's a badass, and she's in the game, just like Dany, just like the Dornish, just like the remaining survivors.
Did anyone else see Cersei's outfit?
Yeah.
Yes. It's incredible.
Did you see those shoulder epaulets? They were fantastically wrought,
and then with that crown on her head,
those wow. images, those shots where she stood there, and it's going to be infinitely screenshotted and posted and spread around the internet like that wildfire spread around the Sept of Baelor in this episode. Wow, what a just unbelievable rise, an unlikely rise, just in one fell swoop, just dominating her opponents. That whole sequence with Jawadi's The Light of the Seven playing and the different movements. It was just with the children running parallel to what was happening inside of the Sept of Baelor. It was, I don't know, like from start to finish, this finale destroyed. But when Sam walked into that library in the Citadel, I just, I think in that moment, I realized that this series not only took a step forward in season six, but will continue to just raise the collective bar in epicness in the wars to come.
I gotta say, that scene is definitely a contender for multiple owns, the sheer vastness alone. And for me, it gave me the most hope that there are so many areas mm-hmm. in the Seven Kingdoms left unexplored. That to me is the biggest takeaway.
Well, and it felt like a moment of reprieve between after everything that we've seen in King's Landing, and we catch a moment of the phrase, not sure what's going to happen there yet, to be able to see Sam and his face light up in front of his lifelong dream.
He's like, that thing's from the opening sequence. That thing that flies.
Yeah, what an awkward hotel check-in. Like,
that was,
we'd
so
like a room
cool.
for three, please. No women and girls. Or no women and children. I don't know. I want more of that scene, and I want it yesterday.
Yeah,
I was
that was
scared
really
for
great.
Him in that mm-hmm. scene, honestly. I thought somebody was going to jump out from behind the bookcase and just end Samwell Tarly right then and there.
Mike is
just
on his
guard
24/7.
Just the way the episode was going. Yeah, no, same thing for Tyrion. And when he was talking with Dany and he had already clearly made Dario upset, I thought Tyrion could be in some trouble. But hey, would you honestly feel any differently given how the episode started? I mean, we lost
everyone.
75% of the Tyrell clan in one fell swoop. We lost two Lannisters and a High Sparrow and a partridge and a pear tree. You know, it's like, everybody gone in an instant.
I am really sad to see Margaery gone. I think out of everybody in King's Landing, which is probably a given, but out of everybody in King's Landing who's gone, Margaery to me is really sad, especially we see her smart enough telling everyone try to leave. And she's like, we have to get out of here. And she's trying to get out of there and she can't. And they're keeping her inside. And she knows. And to have her go out like that. I just loved her character. I love to watch her play the game. And so it's too bad.
Yeah. They barred themselves in.
Yeah.
Just blatantly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much. There's a lot of substance there, the nuance with the High Sparrow and his decisions. And honestly, it reminds me a lot of Cersei's rise to power. And I think that she realized that you have to really shift things around and submit in particular ways in order to get to the point that she got to, and kind of eat crow for a while or eat white raven for a while until it, you know, the moment arises where you can strike like she did. And that was her decision. And it was absolute. The only casualty was her son, which that was, you know, like obvious, that was her fault because she wasn't there for him when it all fell down, and which she definitely should have been. If that was the move, if you're going to do that to his wife and to a collective leadership of his kingdom, a child, and the mother's not going to be there, I mean, who is he going to talk to? Is he going to talk to Gregor Clegane and seek consolation and maybe get some thoughts? I don't know. That was, I didn't see that coming. That was really,
odd to me. I wasn't sure how it was all necessarily going to play out, because in the opening sequences, you see them all getting dressed, getting prepared for the various scenes that are about to take place. And you wonder, is something poisoned? Is something amiss amongst all the different things that are taking place? And I really thought that it was odd that she didn't go to Tommen immediately after she had the foresight to keep him from going to the Sept with the Mountain, but then doesn't do any follow-up. And of course, he sees what happens and his reaction is to take his own life. So I wonder, though, if she knew that that could possibly be the outcome, and if the prophecy that she had heard influenced that in any way. Now, we see her later in the episode clearly distraught, but she has a very clear plan for what is to be done with him. And so that's why part of me wonders if she knew this was inevitable. And so her intent of this plan was always for her to sit the Iron Throne.
Right. Like she wrote him off. I still think that look a couple episodes ago was her realizing that he had fallen and she would have to write him off. I think she embraced the prophecy, essentially.
Right.
Again, not that she caused him to die. She deliberately kept him safe, but that he would also do that, you know, be it that he was crestfallen, be it that everything he thought he was the ruler of had just been destroyed or taken from him. Maybe it was a giant middle finger to his mom, who was clearly the person who did it and was like, hey, you won't own me. You won't control me. Maybe that was it. But, you know, it's such an interesting end for that character. And I love it, because I just could only circle through my mind all of his enemies and like all the ways in which he had no claim to the throne and all the ways in which he could die horribly. And in the end, it was something like sort of poetic, or by his own, at the very least, by his own hand. So that was unexpected, and I'm very pleased with it.
How about the fact that in many ways she succeeded where the Mad King failed? And I think when that moment between Jaime and Cersei happens at the end of the episode, part of me wonders if Jaime is thinking to himself that he has failed yet again. Even though the first time we know that he succeeded, right, it's always been deemed as a failure because he is looked at to be a Kingslayer. But him being the Kingslayer, and even gets mentioned in the conversation with Walder Frey, and you could tell Jaime's reaction was not a good one when Walder did bring that up. It's just the fact that his sister has now done exactly what he was trying to prevent happening all those years ago makes me think that he is going to definitely be the one that ends up killing Cersei.
I agree.
There's too much.
I agree. I think that
in her,
the fact that he, I think that he, like you said, knows better than anybody else what she's capable of. And if she's capable of what she's just done, there's no stopping her. And so I totally agree. I think that theory only in my mind was strengthened after that look exchange between the two of them. And I think I've been waiting for book Jamie, like, you know, the riff between, there's more of a riff between Cersei and Jamie in the book. I think we've been waiting for that in the show a little bit. And I think that this strengthens that as well.
She's the queen of the ashes right now. I mean, not yet, but I feel like it's headed in that direction. This episode was full of just gaspingly, moments. Just the Sept of Baelor. I mean, so many people died in this scene that it was hard to mourn the loss of Mace Tyrell, or it was hard to mourn the loss of Margaery or Loras,
right,
or Kevin Lannister, or countless nobles that filled the Sept of Baelor. And the implications far-reaching of a Cersei-guided Iron Throne. I mean, it'd be a different world if the White Walkers weren't on the way. It'd be a different world if Daenerys weren't so absolutely on her way.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And it's just amazing to me. I mean, she blew up the fucking Sept of Baelor and everybody inside it, and even some people outside of it. So who knows if Margaery and Loras and any of them were able to actually escape, even get outside.
They probably weren't safe.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
There's no way.
And I want to know how Qyburn was able to get away with no effects at all, right? I mean, unless he has like a hidden bunker somewhere, he was pretty close to the action. I don't think that Lancel got too far away from where he was with Pycelle. And I mean, I felt bad for Pycelle in that moment. And look, he got a little bit of something something before he, so you know, he got sent off in not so bad way, right? I mean,
let's be realistic.
And it was kind of a throwback to the Roz scene that he had a couple of seasons ago. But I was, obviously very, very close in, I don't know how spoilery we want to get with A Dance with Dragons in terms of how the epilogue plays itself out, but they basically took Pycelle and made him Kevin Lannister, even though Pycelle does get knocked off, but it's by a different character. So that to me was just such a deranged type of scene where you have these children pull out these knives,
just hammering him
and just hacking him to pieces. And Qyburn's just kind of cool, standing in the corner with his candy.
Where are their parents? Really?
Yeah.
It's the orphans.
But as Qyburn mentioned, I mean, this was really the fall of the old guard. And now this new guard is going to rise up in place, even though it's kind of headed by somebody who was part of the old guard in Cersei.
And it's a totally different kind of guard as well. This is a dictatorship on fear alone. And I think that's where Aerys was headed. But I feel like there's always been a collection of heraldry in Westeros. And if we're talking about Planetos at large, I know that the histories are deep and there are many, many scenarios not too far removed from the current point in time that the realm has been in chaos before. But I'm thinking about Tyrion Lannister as Hand of the Queen on a ship alongside the Dornish, alongside the Tyrells, alongside Daenerys and the Targaryens, alongside Three Dragons and the Greyjoys. I'm trying to think of the scale of what's happening with the White Walkers coming, with the North rallied around a new king. I think that what Qyburn said wasn't limited to King's Landing. It's huge, right? What's happening. I think that this may go down as the most historic time in Planetos. Just crazy.
Do you think that Cersei's reign will be a godless one, since she very clearly stated where she stands on the whole gods thing?
Yes.
You mean her combo with the Septa?
Well, there's that.
Yeah, when she says, what's his name is her god now?
That was the scariest scene.
That. yeah.
Cersei chanting shame. Whew.
Unbelievable how good that was, though. He takes off his helmet and just stands over. She's screaming because there's a dead monster standing above him.
Yeah.
Her.
Abomination. An absolute something that should not exist in a world that is just and fair. You know, in the end, was it pride that killed the High Sparrow? Was he so certain that she would show up, or that he was so powerful in the end because they could just judge Cersei without her needing to be there. He was so blind by what was, I think, should have been very clear to the beginning. What in the end caused his fall? It was pride, wasn't it?
I think that you're right there, especially when we look at Margaery's actions. I mean, he's had so many wins, I guess you could say, over the course of this entire season. It's probably hard for him to imagine things going another way.
I think you're right, Eric. He was so sure of the situation. There was no way that it could possibly... Everyone was there. The seven judges were there. Loras had just gotten carved. It's time for Cersei to get her due. Margaery's on my side. Look at this.
Yeah.
And you could tell how well orchestrated Loras' speech was based on what Margaery told him to say. I mean, at least that's what I took away from it.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm.
She was the master planner, manipulating the situation to her advantage, both with her brother as well as with the High Sparrow. And she probably would have been able to effectively play her cards the way that she wanted to and have it all fall in line with what she wanted to have happen had Cersei not countered her and had a bunch of wildfire set off underneath the Sept of Baelor.
I think that's why I'm so bummed about the fact that she is gone, because exactly to your point, Micah, she this whole time she's understood what's happening, and she's had almost the upper hand in terms of the long game. And so to go out that way, instead of us being able to watch her come out of this horrible situation on top, is something I was hoped for or was excited about. And so it's too bad.
And now you sort of get a complete 180 from where things were just a couple seasons ago, right? We ended with the Red Wedding and the Starks being on the low end of the totem pole. But now I feel like things have completely flipped around and the Lannisters are on the low end of the totem pole, because quite honestly, they don't have any allies. Like you said earlier, Cersei is ruling right now through fear. But when you look at the fact that the North has now rallied all together and Walder Frey has been killed and Daenerys, the Greyjoys, Dorne, and Highgarden have come together in an alliance, what's left for the Lannisters? I mean, Jaime and Cersei, that's it. But there's no alliances there that we're aware of. There's nowhere else that they can turn for support.
And would Jaime support Cersei's bid for more power, more support? Would he ride on his horse and go get more allies? It's a question.
Who are those allies?
I don't know what they could promise, honestly, with the threat. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's call them a threat, but with, you know, the cavalry coming in like it is so powerfully. She mm-hmm. has three full-grown dragons, or at least mostly grown dragons, flying alongside her impenetrable force.
Yep.
They can hold the city down. You know, they can put walls up, and if they have the men, build the three whores again and try to fight. For what though? To, like I said, to rule the ashes of what's going on. It's just,
oh yeah.
What?
I mean, presumably there's Lannister men in Casterly Rock, but they're so far away, and I think the dragon's going to get there first.
It just looks bleak.
This is a good episode, guys. Really,
I know.
Good.
We made it this far without talking about Tower of Joy. I can't believe
it. Yeah. Well, so that happened.
Yeah, so that happened, finally.
This episode,
talk about delayed gratification.
This episode is all one long, so that happened. There was still a little bit of whispering going on, but I managed to catch some of the dialogue. You know, if Robert finds out, you know he will. You have to protect him. Can we say, finally, definitively, that R plus L equals J at this point? Can we? Now? Finally? At last?
I think so.
I
got to say, though,
say.
The fact that was whispered, I was like, are you serious? Like, we're in this moment. I want you to say it out loud. And it was a very cool shot to see.
Scream it with your
baby.
Death rattle.
I know. It was cool to see the baby, whatever, transformer to John between that shot, which is very cool. I just wanted so badly for them to, I don't know what I was expecting for them to say.
What's his name?
Yeah.
John.
To say John.
Name him John.
I don't know what I could have expected differently, but at first I was like, are you serious? Like, finally we're getting confirmation of this theory that we've been thinking about and talking about for years. And I just want someone to just say it. I just want R plus L equals J to flash on my screen. I don't know.
I saw John that was cool. After that, it switched to him from the baby's face in a completely different way.
Yeah.
From that moment forward, I think. We've known and we've guessed, and R plus L equals J has been an equation around longer than our podcast, but it's just getting, like you said, the verification of it, but also just seeing it. I just felt like I was in a dream sort of sequence while that was happening. I know that's dramatic, but when he walks into the chamber and she's bloody and she's obviously just given birth, I mean, from that moment, we knew, right, that the bastard he took home wasn't his. And
absolutely.
I mean, it wasn't a bastard. You could say it was a bastard, but I think Rhaegar and Lyanna were in love, and I think that Jon is Jon Targaryen, and I think that there's a Targaryen in the north, and I think that there's a Targaryen coming to the south, and I think that might be what it takes to destroy the evil coming from the north. I don't know.
And to go from that scene straight into Winterfell and everyone chanting King of the North, I thought was so cool.
Very, I'm just going to cool. go right out there and say I'm going to give my own to Lyanna Mormont.
No.
We have to.
I'm not even going to hold it back. And not right. only that, but the writing such that you go from Lyanna Stark to Lyanna Mormont was really well done.
That's so true.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't want Jon to be selected for King of the North, though. Did you guys?
No. He shouldn't have been receptive. He should have been like, ladies, please. You know, it's my sister's right here. She's I'm not fit to rule.
I thought that's what he was going to do, or at least, I don't know. At some point, I kind of realized that that's not what was going to happen, but.
Right. Well, and we saw him have a little opportunity to still, you know, pass judgment with the scene with Davos and Melisandre as well. He is still clearly interested in having some power over the forces that come. He's still interested in fighting that fight. I think that everyone's proclamations for him took him by surprise. I think it took everyone by surprise, but you can't sort of help but begin to love it once you get that sort of fervor in a room and you have these men like Lord Glover apologizing or, you know, kind of weaseling out of a real apology, but just sort of declaring for you. It's very contagious, the mood.
Did it not sound heartfelt, though? Didn't it feel... I think what your point is exactly what... I think that people so wholeheartedly, after all that has happened, truly felt... Yeah, I think even more so than what was going on with Rob. Like, after all of the injustice and all of the suffering and with Winter upon them, I think that they truly felt, pull out our fucking swords, that is the king.
Well, that's what they need in the North, is a rallying point like Jon. And you look at, as we've been saying a million times since the dawn of time, you look at what's going to come from the far North, and the North hasn't had somebody like Jon. And if, regardless of who we think should be
since
sitting
Ned.
In that chair.
Yeah.
I think that if they're going to rally behind Jon, I think it would not be smart of him to try to pass that off to somebody else. Especially
well,
right
moment,
now.
Yeah, that wouldn't have made any sense.
Does Sansa not also rule if Jon rules? Because I don't think that he's interested in a split chair. He made it clear. If they hadn't had that conversation on the battlements, I think there could be a tease of an argument there that they're going to be at odds. But after she knows his true intention, and we know because they made sure to put that scene in, I was rooting for Sansa because I wanted Sansa to be the queen of the North. This ended up happening. But as far as logistics are concerned, Sansa could have reason to be bothered. But she doesn't strike me as the person to care if her name is the name that's written on the trophy. You know, she's still a Stark in Winterfell. Right. You know what I mean? Like, so it really depends on Littlefinger's twist, and is Littlefinger's hold strong enough to make her angry at her brother? Because while this is all happening, that threat from the North really is coming. It really is on its way. So they're really going to have to figure out how long will this happen? This struggle between them, if it does happen, how long will it last? And it really, I guess, it just comes down to how strong Littlefinger's hold is on Sansa. And it's annoying that it's there.
Yeah.
But this is just, this is how it happened. This is how the story shook out.
Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked about it a number of times, but she is definitely going to end up being his undoing in some capacity, just based on how these scenes between the two of them were playing themselves out. And she now clearly has the upper hand, whereas, at least in the last season, maybe even going back two seasons, he had the upper hand. I think the balance of power has kind of shifted in her direction now.
Well, with Varys now completely tied in with Daenerys, a Targaryen, it's going to be difficult for Littlefinger to travel south and make an arrangement with Daenerys in the first place. But with Varys there, it's even more difficult. So with the Knights of the Vale now declared for the Starks in Winterfell, I think her point about him changing is very true. But I think right now he sort of has to hang around unless he wants to declare with the White Walkers, because
right. What better option does he have?
Did you go to King's Landing and continue things with Darth Cersei? I don't know.
No. And Littlefinger really laid himself bare to Sansa. Again, he showed sort of all his cards, and that's something that is so stupid to do. But it was great. It was absolutely what Sansa... I mean, Sansa has all the tools she needs to destroy him. She just needs to decide that that's something that she wants to do.
I love him going in to kiss her, and she like pushes him away. Yes,
better than a dagger. I thought he was getting a dagger.
That's a pretty picture.
A dagger would have been excellent, but I think that we've talked about the way Sansa, and we still don't know the answer to this, but the way that Sansa reacts to Littlefinger is going to say so much about who she is and who she's been this season when we've been confused. And so, in that moment, that gave me confidence that while Littlefinger probably does have a bit of a hold on her, I think that she is thrilled to be back in Winterfell. And I think that, like John said, she and John have to trust each other. And hopefully that is going to be strong enough to keep Littlefinger far enough out to have any real influence.
I mean, Sansa herself said, "You've declared for other houses before, Lord Baelish. It's never stopped you from serving yourself." She's got his number. He just came up to her and said that his only dream, his biggest wish, is me on the Iron Throne and you by my side. He's so done. He's done. He's absolutely done right now. Sansa should end it.
He's done.
He's done. He's over with. He has no, you know, it's once you reveal your motivations, you die. You have nothing left to hide or conceal. I think his days are numbered, especially with Varys where he is. Don't know if you guys agree.
Varys definitely seems to have chosen the better of the winning two teams, at least for right now.
We did get to see Wyman Manderly, though.
Oh, yeah.
So, Mike, finally. I know you're pleased about that.
Well, we had heard that he'd been cast. It's like, well,
I was surprised he wasn't eating.
Yeah, usually he... he was actually in better shape, I think, than most of us anticipated, given his description in the books.
Yep. Yep, but that was cool. Today's episode of Game of Bones is brought to you by Harry's.
I was at a business conference earlier this week, and I needed a close shave. Harry's provided. I was being viewed with close scrutiny among a jury of my peers, and let me tell you, I was very pleased to have the Truman set packed in my carry-on. I love the shaving cream. I love the razors. I love the aftershave. It all adds up to a suave-looking me that I haven't seen in years.
You're a very suave man, Eric.
I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I could be suave again. I actually have to shave now regularly, so it's pretty good that I have the Truman set.
Harry's makes just one razor with all you need for a close, comfortable shave. 5 German-crafted blades, flex hinge, and lubricating strip. The quality is guaranteed and a full refund if you're not happy.
Harry sent each of us the Truman kit, and that's what Eric is carrying now to all of his business conferences, to all of his fantasy sci-fi conferences that we're traveling to for the summer.
That's true, too.
And because of Harry's sponsoring this episode of the podcast, Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase. That means the Truman set, which was originally $15, is now $10.
Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman set. That's HARRYS.com. You can enter the code OWNS at checkout to get the $5 off and help support the show.
Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today.
This episode of Game of Owns is also sponsored by USA Network's Mr. Robot, which on July 13th returns for a second season. Mr. Robot is the 2015 Peabody Award and Critics' Choice Award winner, starring Golden Globe and SAG Award nominee Rami Malek and Golden Globe Award winner Christian Slater.
Christian Slater.
Christian Slater, Mr.
That's right,
Robot.
Ladies and gentlemen, Christian Slater on a television show that sponsors your favorite Game of Thrones podcast. Please tell me what could be better.
Could we be more hype?
Mr. Robot follows Elliot, a cybersecurity engineer by day and vigilante hacker by night, who follows a mysterious leader to join hacker group F Society. They put their skills to the test in taking down E Corp, a giant conglomerate that owns the whole world's personal and banking information. But when they pull off the hack, they quickly realize that they had no idea what they were getting into.
Excited yet?
Now that we have nothing else to watch. We all need a new TV show.
Mr. Robot is full of stellar acting, and it's one of the most uniquely shot TV shows around. I think we know a couple more of those, at least one more, which has now ended. So season two beginning could not have come at a better time. Mr. Robot season two comes Wednesday, July 13th at 10/9 Central on USA Network.
The official digital companion experience for Mr. Robot is at whoismrrobot.com, and we think Mr. Robot for sponsoring Game of Owns.
Own to you, Mr. Robot.
I don't really know how to, like, do we even have to move on, or can we just say again that that was a cool scene? The feels were real.
That was a cool scene.
You know, when they were shouting and chanting that at Jon Snow, I mean, he's been picked for stuff before.
So good.
It was just good. It was just really, really good. Really, really good.
We've been waiting so long for Winterfell to be back in the hands of the Starks, and finally.
And hopefully Bran makes his way there at some point, though I'm not sure he's leaving that Weirwood tree anytime soon. I didn't understand that.
Take your horse?
Yeah.
Yeah, he took the horse. I was like, how is Mira going to drag him wherever they have to go next? How rude is that? I bet Benjen could find another horse.
I mean, if it was the elk, I'd understand, like, but that was kind of fucked up, Benny.
Let me drop you off here. I'll be on my merry way.
Good luck, guys.
So I'm still trying to figure that out. They're not exactly at the wall yet, right?
I could see the wall in the distance. They're at the Weirwood tree that the Night's Watch swears in front of.
Mm-hmm. I assumed it was sort of analogous to the Black Gate, that they were going to, you know, that mouth was going to open up and they were going to go through the wall, sort of maybe
Brand.
Crawling. Yeah, like Swallow Brand, exactly, like in Mario Brothers 2.
Well, can the Three-Eyed Raven cross through there, or is it truly only a member of the Night's Watch?
Ah, that's a good question. Yeah, maybe they'll have to swear their vows, take the vows first before going. I don't know.
What about the protection, though? That's what had me interested when Benjen was talking about this magical protection that exists. Does this mean that he has left Bran and Mira in a safe space where the Night King cannot penetrate and attack him?
I don't know. I don't feel confident in Bran being safe from the Night's King anywhere.
Well, after he was touched, that changed things at the tree, but that could have been because he was warging from the tree. And Benjen did specifically mention that at the foundation of the wall, old magic, and it's very strong. But is that also moot if Bran crosses the wall? I think is another pretty big question.
Right.
It's going to be a powerful mark. It's a big, big and long wall. So cancel out all that magic. So a lot of questions there.
Yeah, I was going to say that left me with a lot of questions just because you're leaving Bran here. Clearly, it's not just to touch the tree and have one vision about the Tower of Joy that should have been completed a couple of episodes
convenient.
Ago.
And just right. just leave him there.
Well, he can't move anyway, so I don't know how Mira's going to drag
truth,
him.
Right? He knows the truth about Jon, so now what does he do with that information?
Yeah. Goes and tells him, probably.
It's a good question for our follow-up episode.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. I mean, if the Targaryens are as grand as they thought they were in the days of old Valyria, you know, and they could be part of the key to cancel out what the children created. I don't know. There's a lot of lore there that we'll get into, I'm sure, more in our next episode.
And speaking of going places, what about Melisandre? Where's she going?
Yeah.
Deepwood Mott.
To chill.
Somewhere. I mean, I know that she has the Lord's Light to keep her warm, but
Yeah.
You know, is she going to hunt?
She's off to meet up with Arya like she told her she would.
Yeah, and the Hound.
Yeah.
And the Brotherhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the newest member. She's going to continue. I think she's going to continue fighting Leah. She's going to fight the good fight just far away from Davos and Davos's belated rage. Let's just call it belated rage. Sorry, Davos. I love you, buddy. They finally had the luxury of Davos getting angry. He finally had the luxury of finally getting
so
angry
good
and
in
seeking
that scene.
Justice. He was great.
Real.
He shouted. Yeah, he threw things.
His expression tears in his was eyes. Just incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really cool. I think that that was emotion from Davos that we haven't been able to see very often, if at all.
Well, like in the Braavos, when he was talking with the bankers, he really stood up for Stannis, but yeah.
I think he respects Jon's banishing of Melisandre the same way that he would respect any judgment of Stannis's. As for being fair, I'm not 100% on that. I'll have to rewatch, but it just seemed like he wasn't still crying for blood after Jon sort of passed his sentence. So that leads me to believe that Davos and Jon are still okay. But ultimately, it's the promise that they're not going to fall into the same trap of burning children alive and, you know, in order to produce results. That era is done. And as far as Davos is concerned, he's prevented that from becoming this new order. So good for him, you know?
Exactly. I mean, if I was Lady Mormont, I would be concerned if she was still hanging around.
She burns children. Yeah, it's a thing.
Gonna burn Lyanna.
No, she doesn't just burn children. I mean, she burns...
She burns everyone
everybody.
Equally. She's an equal opportunity incinerator.
Incinerator.
Right. But I thought it was very telling that she said that she was wrong. I mean, she mm-hmm. said she didn't lie.
Yeah.
She was wrong. And I think mm-hmm. that, you know, it's in a way, it's kind of a de-evolution of her character. And we do get a perspective from her in the books, but it humanizes her a bit, even though we know she's not really all that human based on mm-hmm. what we saw earlier this season.
Or is she more human than we are? Just a better human.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's definitely older. Like, all right. Sorry.
Like 800 years older. But yeah, look, I mean, I think it just shows that she's fallible, right? And maybe now she has it right. And those people that she's trying to help are pushing her away, and it's going to be to their detriment at some point.
Maybe she'll join the sisterhood. I mean, the brotherhood. Her and Arya could start the sisterhood.
The sisterhood?
Oh, God. The Ghost of High Heart joins Arya, Melisandre.
We do need some Ghost of High Heart.
You know what I'm saying?
Six. They've cleared up the budget enough.
When the White Fawn comes out of hiding and joins?
Lady Stoneheart.
It's a woman's
Lady
world
Stoneheart.
Out there, so.
Yeah, we need some of the jesters to come back, and now we need the Ghost of High Heart and some other creatures that...
Also, Ghost.
Yeah, Ghost should have been there.
I was a little surprised that Jon dismissed her so quickly, simply because she brought him back to life. I think that it's within his character to do what he did, but I was a little surprised that without really thinking much, this woman who brought him back to life and gave him this second chance,
yeah.
he sent her away so quickly. I don't know. I think that that probably says a lot about how he feels about Davos.
I think so too.
But she literally brought him back to life, and he wouldn't be there without her. And she's given him important counsel, so.
And at Davos's command too, which is somewhat ironic,
yeah,
given
so
this
strange.
Entire situation. I mean, I'm not quite honestly sold on this storyline because, as I mentioned, I think in the last week's episode, it's really hard for me to buy into the fact that he went to a pile of rubble in the snow and was able to find this stag, you know, layers beneath it, and then draws a conclusion that she was burned at the stake, Melisandre was responsible. It's just one of those things that I think maybe would have been better served following what happened in last season when Melisandre returned to Castle Black and Davos reacts the way that he does to learning about Stannis and Selyse and Shireen. And, you know, one thing that Melisandre did do in this episode too was put blame on Stannis, put blame on Selyse.
Yeah, yeah.
And
where
said it's not just
belonged.
My responsibility. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, not just not just my fault. You know, there's others that, that were culpable in this.
Maybe they needed to just banish Melisandre and move her toward
the Brotherhood.
What she's doing. Yeah. Right. If it's the Brotherhood or if it's Arya and the Sisterhood, I don't know.
The Sisterhood.
I can't get over it. I think that's a great idea.
I think that that's the new thing.
The Hound's still an honorable member. But
the Sisterhood of the Traveling Faces.
They're in that general area, though. Middle Westeros. Mm-hmm. Winter is coming. Sam is in Old Town. I feel like we've got, maybe even more so than ever before, we have some pretty definitive lines that are drawn. Other than Dario staying east, we have basically all of our players in Westeros now for the first time ever.
Oh my god.
We still have Brienne and Pod rowing somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, still rowing.
And Gendry rowing somewhere.
Still rowing.
And Jorah riding somewhere.
Oh, so Jorah's out east. That's my mistake.
Riding. Yeah, Jorah's in the east. Yeah, yeah.
And he matters. We're not letting go of Jorah Mormont. We're not.
No. Heavens no. Young so Jorah bear. And Dario.
We talked a lot about who we thought was going to stay behind, possibly in Meereen. And Dario was not at the top of my list. So that surprised me a little bit. It makes sense, but that surprised me a little bit.
I really enjoyed, first of all, everything with Daenerys and Tyrion. But the Daenerys, the Dany letting go. Yeah, the Dany letting go of Dario and finding out that it was, in fact, as he guesses, Tyrion's idea. But that's a weak spot for Daenerys because she cares about Dario. That she let him go so that he would not be a hostage or so she can have no weaknesses. It's pretty smart. It's pretty smart thinking. And I think Tyrion deserves his new title. His official title, pin included.
I felt probably as emotional, if not more, in that scene. I guess you could equate it to the King of the North scene. That was fantastic.
They're sitting on the steps and Tyrion says, how about the fact that this is actually happening?
Yes.
And that's what I was thinking while I'm sitting there like, yes, you and Dany are just sitting on the steps having this chat about how, what you're going to do next and the fact that you're actually heading to Westeros. And then she names him Hand and...
And that was peak Dany.
Yeah. That was so cool. And how exactly can you believe this is actually happening? Me? No, I can't.
Yeah. That's the kind of sacrifice that makes for a great ruler. If it's any consolation, it's not.
Yeah.
So these good. Were great. These were great. And honestly, actually, I felt there was a significant character moment with Dany when she's talking about feeling nothing, like letting Tyrion into her heart. She's like, I let him go. I felt nothing. And he says, he wasn't the first to love you and he won't be the last. Like this is Dany feeling like she might be going down a slope. Like what kind of person am I if I do not love? What kind of person am I if I don't feel? But I think Tyrion is right to try and put her back on balance here.
They're such a good team.
Yeah, they're a really great team. They're a power couple.
And he says that he believes in her. You know, how touching was that?
Yeah.
And he never believed in anything. He's always kind of shunned the idea, and it's almost embarrassing how much he believes in her, but it's just, that was so cool.
I can't wait for him to roll up the King's Landing, the hand of Queen Daenerys.
Right
to Cersei,
after Jaime
sitting
has
on the
killed
throne.
Cersei.
Is he flying into King's Landing or is he rowing on a ship from his bigger ship? What do you think it'll be?
Doesn't matter. Well, if he's riding on a dragon, that matters very much.
It changes a little
never
bit. I kind of want them to make up, you know? I know that probably not possible, but it would be cool to see them make up.
Tyrion and Cersei.
Yeah. And Jaime.
I could see Tyrion being down with that, but I don't. Cersei is so far gone.
Yes, the prospect of Cersei without Tommen, Myrcella, Joffrey, anyone to keep her anchored down, and now having not only that fact, but now she's also the commander. You know, she's in charge. Holy shit.
How can it seem like simultaneously she's lost everything and yet gained the one thing that matters most?
Right.
Like, that's pretty cool character development.
It's going to be interesting, like we were saying earlier, how Jaime is going to actually react, because I think that he's probably the last thing that could possibly keep her human and grounded, you know? And I think that if they come at odds, like we think that they may be, she's got nothing, literally nothing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she is grounded, though. Did you hear her speak to Septa and Nella? She's like, I like this.
I like this.
Yeah.
I so like much. This.
Killed my husband.
I like having the mountain good. As a zombie. He's a lot more useful and amicable than when he was really the mountain. I like what he's about to do to you. I like all of this. I like my new outfit. The short haircut works for me right now.
Feels good.
I like it all. I mean, this is her at peace, like with herself, and she has power. Fuck's sake, Cersei. Damn. That's cool. But I didn't, you know.
She has nothing left to lose. So I mean, cool. That's the scariest part, is she's lost all of her children. She still has Jaime, but to what extent?
For now.
And now,
yeah.
She's just in a place where she is in complete control, ruling by fear, and who's gonna challenge her? That's the real question, and I think that's what makes her the most dangerous.
And what's gonna happen next? King's Landing look like?
A year, Hannah. That's how it works.
It's presumably Cersei on the throne that Daenerys wants to take, and you know she's just. Cersei's so outmatched, and I think burning everything down is going to be the card that that Dany now plays. It's not going to be Cersei's to play again. Can she get out of this alive? I doubt it. It'll probably be the shortest reign in all of Westeros history, but it's not to say it's not compelling.
Yeah, it really is. Meanwhile, mystery we thought would get settled or pointed at least further along as the season drew to a close. What's happening with the White Walkers and the Night King? And Bran's role.
That's just so interesting that they didn't feel the need to hint at something coming from the north, essentially, by showing any of the White Walkers. In fact, the last time they were seen was probably back with Bran's visions after. Yeah, this is the back half of this season has been devoid of them. I worry and wonder, and it keeps me up at night. What are they doing? What are they planning? How will they get past the wall?
You're on,
you know, but but there's so many nice, I would love that if Euron just declares for the dead and, rides some ships up to, the icy shores and goes and gets them. But you know, it's just a testament to how many cool character things were going on south of the wall, and to get Bran now going south too. It's such a nice, there were reunions. I even marked Ned and Lyanna down as a Stark reunion because they had been separated for a while. And I was just thinking, so many cool things are happening in this episode. And, you know, we didn't need any of that Norse stuff. We know it's coming. The doves, for instance, the white ravens, man. Winter's here.
Just shooting out of the side of the tower.
That was all that needed to be said. Winter is here. We are fucked. Father always used to say that was going to happen.
Gosh.
Yes, I loved that. I loved that exchange between Sansa and Jon when they both kind of smiled at each other that Winter was finally there.
All right. Well, the owns are impossible. Your owns are numerous. I really don't know what to give it to. This episode was a masterwork. It was a masterwork in writing and depiction and directing and acting performance across the board. This was fantastic. Thank you so much to those who create this show and continue to rise its popularity 6 seasons in. We're throwing a convention next summer. I know that season 7 is going to be fucking nuts just because look at this. Look at this shit.
Look at this.
Look at this shit. Yeah. Everything between the little throw and catch between Davos and Melisandre, she didn't know what it was, but she caught it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, here it is.
All of it.
It was so good. It was so fun. It was so exciting.
Oh, thank you. Own to you.
Thank you. Yeah.
All. But also to Old Town and the library and Sam and his awe and wonder. I was you.
Took my own.
Sorry.
You got to get in there real fast.
That was the most epic thing I've ever seen on television. That was incredible. True. That was incredible.
Somewhere in that library is the Winds of Winter.
Why can't Harry Potter be that good?
So, yeah. Okay. I'm going to second Zach's own. I'm going to go and say own to the massive library of Old Town. Are there enough decimals in the world to categorize all of those books? That was my whole thing, is like, well, how are those organized? And also, for all of those books, are none of them about gender equality because women and children are still not allowed? Fuck off. Like, seriously. The maesters. I look so forward to experiencing that place in season 7.
Well, I'm going to give my own to the score behind the first what, 15, 20 minutes of the episode, all in King's Landing when everyone's dressing for the trial, and throughout the whole thing until, I guess, Tommen jumps out the window.
and I then just again felt at the end.
The tension that it created and the way that it moved the scene along, I thought that the music and the score, especially in those moments, were beyond incredible and easily one of my favorite scenes in the whole series. So, own to that.
Nice.
And my own, like I said earlier in the episode, goes to Lyanna Mormont for just completely owning all the Northern Lords and rallying them behind the new King of the North, Jon Snow.
You could see both Jon and Sansa were looking at her like, what did we do to deserve this child?
Holy wildfire, guys. We made it through the finale.
Holy wild, holy Baylor.
This has been such a great talk. I was looking forward so much after the episode ended to talk to you guys. Thank you again for being my friends and for doing all of this, like, just for doing this together. This is so fun.
Man, I'm like getting emotional thinking about the fact that this Anna, is where we are.
Are you getting behind the hashtag DannyKillCersei2K17?
I mean, I guess I got to get on board. Early? It's a little too early. I'm still mourning.
I think it has to be Drogon. Yeah, Drogon kills Cersei.
I'm still mourning Ghost Kills Ollie 2K16. So hit me up in a couple months when I'm over that.
Where was Ghost? He wasn't in this episode again.
I don't know. I just feel being like lazy. That's with all the good, that's just a blatant what? Because, you know, John and Ghost are, I know how I am tight with my dog, and we're not connected through telepathy. Like, I wish that we were, and sometimes I pretend that we are, but we're not. But John and Ghost are. Why isn't he at the high table, or at least nearby?
Yeah. Can you imagine Ghost sitting next to John while they're all chanting King in the North?
Well, I know that we've been getting in a number of owns, as mentioned earlier. Zach, you had said that they continue to pour in, and I'm sure they will over the course of the next couple of days.
Heavens, yes.
There's a number of ways, though, that if you're listening to the show right now and you haven't yet said in your owns, that you can do so. The first is by tweeting at us at Game of Owns. Scroll upon our Facebook wall at facebook.com/Game of Owns, or send us an email at contact@GameOfOwns.com.
And we'd like to remind you that Mr. Robot returns for Season 2 on Wednesday, July 13th at 10, 9 Central on USA Network.
And the season may have concluded tonight, but we will not. We will forge on and be reading more of the chapters of our read-through of A Feast with Dragons. And with that being said, it means that you can, of course, continue to rate and review the show over on iTunes. It is the month of June still, so nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable when you rate and review the show. And we'll read a few of those reviews on an upcoming episode. We always like to see what you have to say. And it's great for other people who may be looking for something to listen to about Game of Thrones. Let them know that we exist. So in advance, we, of course, appreciate you reading and reviewing the show.
And thanks for reviewing us during the season.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's obviously huge.
Seriously.
We're strapping in for A Feast with Dragons soon. It's been a break, but it's been a pretty good break. Season 6 has been pretty awesome. And we get to talk about it again on the next episode, and we're going to go deeper. And we still have Owns of the Season, which they usually turn out to be like the most fun episodes, because I feel like they're...
I think they do.
It's really fun. And you get to tell us
season.
Your Owns of the Season, which, I mean, that's also very exciting.
I'm the Tullys mocked me for years. The Starks mocked me. Where are they now?
This is going to be hard.
I know. Good problems.
Yeah,
they are good problems to have.
I'm excited to see what everyone comes up with.
And we also have to review our death pools.
Oh my gosh, our own prediction. Wow, okay.
If one of you can write in and tell me what mine were, I completely don't know.
I got mine, and I didn't do so great.
I think that's it. I think we're going to go watch the episode again.
Yeah.
It's on right now. I'm watching it.
Thanks for an awesome Season 6.
It's been the best.
The King of the North.
But Sam,
I was
Sam,
a little.
Yeah. All right.
What do you want to say?
I'm sorry. I was making a joke about Sam. Please go on.
Do you want to make your joke? I'll laugh at it if you want to make it real
Sam's
quick.
Sam's working for John from a distance, but I'm. All right. It sucked. Sorry, I'm still hyped for this episode.